All right. Welcome everybody to the February 7th, 2022 Design Review Board meeting. I'm going to call this into order, 7 p.m. Can we get a roll call, the DRB members?
Randall Brand.
Present.
Brad Brown.
Present.
Carlos Castaneda.
Here.
Ting Chen. Shoshana Cohen, Adam Crane,
here,
and Amy Trace,
present. And it's actually Tars.
Tars, I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Did we have any comments, or did we need to review the minutes from October 4th?
Do we want to like to make a motion to approve?
Got a second? I'll second it. All right. Minutes from October 4th. I guess we'll approve those.
Hey, Adam, I think you could just ask if there are any objections. And then
okay. They can be approved. Are there any objections to the minutes? I assume not. Nope, hearing no objections. Guess we can approve those?
Correct.
Right. All right, announcement of the agenda. A pretty short agenda. We just have one item tonight. Kirkland Urban East Building at 501 Uptown Court. This is, I guess, a continuation from the last one in October. It's been a while. Right. So I guess we open up to comments from the audience now. Is there anyone in attendance that would have comments?
Yeah, so to clarify, this portion of the public comment would be for any item that is not on the agenda. There will be opportunity as part of the design response conference for the Kirkland Urban project for public comment for that project later. So at this point, if anyone in the audience has any general public comments, please hit the raise hand feature. So it doesn't look like there's any, Adam.
All right. Guess moving on, don't believe we have any unfinished business, no conceptual design conferences. So I guess we can move on to the design response conference for Kirkland Urban East Building. I guess we'll start with the staff presentation on.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Just one second here. I just have one screen. So.
Can hear me.
Okay. So we're here for the Kirkland Urban East project, file DRB 21-00535. Again, this is a continuation of the design response conference from the October 4th, 2021 meeting. At that meeting, the board had a list of items that they had requested the applicant to address. So we'll be reviewing those tonight and additionally reviewing the project for consistency with the applicable design guidelines. In this case, it's for the Kirkland Park Place mixed use development. And also for the DRB to consider public comments. Just again, for the DRB's authority, the DRB is here to review the project for consistency with the design guidelines. If applicable, they would also review any zoning regulations that require DRB approval. In this case, there are none. Additionally, staff will be doing a review of the building permits. We'll be looking at permit uses, height, lot coverage, setbacks, appurtenances, things like that. Also in this case, compliance with the master plan standards that have been set within the Park Place master plan, and also compliance with previous SEPA determination. So as far as the October 4th meeting was concerned, the DRB was generally accepting of the overall design, but they wanted more details from the applicant. Also, the applicant kind of, you know, provided, you know, basic information about the project, you know, a lot of massing, that kind of thing, didn't provide. They were still working through a lot of their materials and things like that. So that's one of the main things that the board wanted to see. So I'll just go over a brief overview of kind of the items that the board had requested at that last meeting. First, they wanted full building perspectives or a detailed SketchUp model. They wanted to provide the applicant to provide corner to corner perspectives and edge to edge perspectives. Additionally, they wanted to see building section cuts and details, corners, terracotta, how that works, how the windows work, that kind of thing. Also, they wanted to provide the applicant to provide ground floor storefront details, including glazing and materials. They requested the applicant provide a detailed lighting plan, including views of the building at night. Additionally, they wanted the applicant to provide, as far as materials are concerned, material boards, which were provided and by the applicant, and I'll put on display for the City Hall for the DRB's members to come in to take a look at. Also, they provided material plans, requested material plans showing location of the materials, colors, including balconies and railings. Additionally, we want to see perspectives of the colonnade design during the day and night to get a feel of the pedestrian experience. How treatment of blank walls, specifically in the ground wall along 6th Street, would work. The elements the applicant would incorporate to treat those blank walls. Rooftop mechanical screening and maintenance requirements, for example, if there's a railing or parapet, building code requirements, that kind of thing, how that would work for the project. Also wanted the applicant to provide details about the plaza, including the lighting plan, planting plan, paving materials, and seating areas. Additionally, some as far as the terrace plans, the second story terraces the applicant was showing in their plans, wanted to see details on those and including landscaping. Wanted to see the sign locations, relationship to the master plan, how that the signs are going to work for the project. If there was any incorporation of artwork into the plaza area, where would that be? Details on the applicant had brought up some the net zero water use, how that would have any potential impacts on the site design. And finally, wanted them to look at a case study for trees for the trees to stabilize in the plaza, because those trees will be, you know, on top of a parking garage below. So those were kind of the summary of the items the board had requested. So the applicant has provided response to those as far as the plan package, and then I obviously they'll be providing a response as part of their presentation tonight. I did want to update you on the street design minor modifications. So this was a planning director decision that was recently made. So this is kind of just showing the two minor modifications that the planning director approved for the project. The first is the access drive on the north side of the building. You can see what the master plan calls for on the upper left-hand corner. And then the lower right is the proposed access road. You can see the colonnade, the landscaping, and the drive areas and the sidewalk on the north. So that's showing that minor modification. And then the other minor modification was the South Street design. And this is showing basically the fire lane. Actually, I guess as part of the master plan, it called it out either as a fire lane or a drive lane. It's no longer needed as a drive lane. So in this case, it's just going to be a fire lane. So this is showing the modification that was approved. Basically, the driving width is actually a little larger, and that obviously will be also used by pedestrians and bicyclists when not used as for emergency access. So That's the information on that, those approvals. So tonight, we're looking for the DRB to provide feedback on the applicant's response to the DRB's requested items. We'd like you to consider public comments and, if applicable, approve the project or, if needed, continue to a future meeting to address any requested items. So that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Tony.
Yes.
I guess we'll move on to the applicant's presentation.
Thank you, Tony. And it's good to be back for our third visit with the Design Review Board. Let me share my screen and kind of introduce the folks that we'll be talking to you. One second here. Can everyone see that? We're good. So my name's Thomas Robinson, and I'm the founding principal of Lever Architecture. We're based in Portland, so far away. And I also have with your principal from David Malda, from GGN Landscape Architects, based in Seattle area. And Danny Canterbury is from my team and a few other folks. We have, I think what we really want to do is really address all the things that Tony talked about and take the time to go through everything in detail. I think we've taken our time to come back because we really want to address all the comments you had at a pretty precise level. And this is the current evolution of the building, and we'll return to this rendering in more detail, but it contains where we're at and what we'd like to move forward with. I wanted to just, and I know Tony did a great job talking about the process, but we were here on May 17th for the conceptual design review, and I think we had a really good discussion about the massing, and we took your feedback from that. And then October 4th, I thought was a really productive session where we went through the landscape concepts on the site, refinement of the building massing, the building structure, the facade design, and the building material concepts. And these were sort of a little bit of a summary of what Tony talked about in terms of the kind of key areas that I think you asked for more information on, and really the detail, the site material development in detail, the building material development, and then the building and site lighting, and then a lot of detail on the pedestrian experience of the ground floor. So, and then also the update that I think Tony really gave on some of the planning issues, sustainability, signage, and art. So this is the order that I'll take us through, and David and myself will kind of be going back and forth a little bit on the landscape. And we have both a SketchUp model that we can show you. We also have a recording of the SketchUp model that we can show you, because last time we had some trouble, and our SketchUp model is like half a gigabyte. So sometimes on the internet, it just has trouble. So just key project drivers. I know you've seen this slide before, but these are sort of the principles that have really driven the design from the beginning. This idea of stewardship, its specificity to Moss Bay, its connection to the industry on the waterfront, and there happens to be an image of a wooden barge being built, and then the idea of doing one of the largest mass timber buildings in the region in Kirkland, the idea of doing a building that has less embodied carbon and also sequesters carbon. And then I think the client's really focused on creating a project that really connects to the community, both in Kirkland as sort of locus urban center, but also to the wider region, and thinking about sourcing mass timber from Washington or the area from sustainably managed forests. So that's something, it's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes on that. And I just wanted to remind you of the sort of key things that are driving the project. I also wanted to kind of just review with you the scope of the project. The red line is sort of the areas that we're touching as part of this project. We have 300 parking stalls below grade. We also have 155 bike stalls, and we have a very complex logistics and loading dock area that also serves the supermarket. So it's like there's a lot going on in the back there below grade. But I think the most important things that, you know, for this group and thinking about the user experience is that entry colonnade and street experience, which we'll be talking about in more detail, the landscape plaza, the relationship of our scope to the existing stair that you're probably aware of, the sort of little stadium piece, the playground and the south fire access, that also happens to be the bicycle access along that area. And I think that was something you really wanted to see in more detail, how that would work. And then the Sixth Street approach. And Sixth Street is a pretty busy street. And there's actually a lot of grade change. I mean, as if you've been out there on that street, and I think dealing with that and thinking about how to make that a pleasing pedestrian experience. So this is the kind of night view updated of the same view from the plaza. And we'll revisit that as we get into the detail, but I just wanted to show you the overall view. And with that, I'm gonna have David take us through, both of us will take us through sort of the development of the site and landscape design.
Great, thanks, Thomas. So just a reminder, you know, really one of the biggest focus areas for us in this project is to build on and enhance what's already good about Kirkland Urban, and then bring this additional layer of specificity to the regional ecology and sustainability. Next. And here you see the overall updated site plan. No big changes. We've been built on the framework that we discussed last time, made a number of refinements, and now we're going to talk today in more detail about materials. So starting with the arrival and the plaza space, looking at the materiality of the drop-off, what's being proposed is a flush condition. We really know that the bulk of the vehicles are moving in and out of the garage and in the eastern portion of the roadway. And so what we're doing is creating texture with pavers in a grade change from a curb condition on the east to a flush condition at that drop off with a material change, as well as a detectable warning dot along there to make sure that it's a safe and, you know, accessible space. But really we want cars to be moving very slowly through this area and make it feel like a higher quality pedestrian first environment that vehicles will be coming through. And that builds on the character of the existing concrete on the north side that's already poured and in place. So we're framing it with that and then putting pavers into the middle of that area. There's also bike racks that have been added in where you see number two and bollards that are already there today to keep cars from driving onto the pedestal pavers at the plaza. Next. And here you can see more detail on the materiality, a precast concrete paver. Samples of these have been supplied with the board, but moving from the existing pedestal pavers, the precast pavers that are out there today in the main plaza, into the concrete that's poured in place. And number two, that's existing. We're wrapping that turn circle, as I said, and then putting pavers to give a little bit more texture and break down the overall scale of the experience in the middle. And then number four, along the building, we're using a pattern of basalt paver to give a little bit more materiality, texture, interweaving with that garden vocabulary. Next. Now, one of the changes that we've made since the last time we talked is actually to integrate more garden type seating into this space and create a little bit finer scale of some of the planters. One of the things we talked about with you was what's the attraction, what's the program around this? Of course, we don't have a lot of influence on the larger plaza, but we thought we could really focus the identity and experience of this garden through more seating and a little bit more immersion in terms of the pathways moving through. So there's two types of bench, one without a back along the retail, and then one with a back that's in the garden. And these build on the vocabulary of the movable benches down in the lower plaza already. So we're trying to tie into the existing condition. Next. And then as we talked about last time, we're wrapping the seat walls that rise up to create more framing of space and seating around the retail pavilion and orientation towards that overlook stair with a combination of a textured concrete wall with a wood top that's integrated into it. Next.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to talk about the entry sequence and really focusing on that ground floor experience. You can see this is the view when you get out of a car. So this is the entry, main entry into the building here. And then retail directly adjacent with that landscape that you saw on the previous slide, foregrounding that with pathways and the benches that David just mentioned. David, I don't know if you have anything to add about the landscape design.
No, well, I'll say primarily one of the goals is this is all native planting, as we talked about before, and you'll see in the next slide that we are providing sufficient soil depth to support the trees. It's a mixture of alders and a couple conifers in this area.
Yeah, just to point out, like, we're kind of signaling and scaling down the building where pedestrians kind of come in. So at the entry, the main entry into the building, there's a cutout in the terraces and landscape that you see above, so you can sort of see where that's located. I think David can talk more about the planning over structure and the tree stabilization, right?
Yeah. So there's a range of depths, but we're strategic in getting at least 4 feet of soil through the main areas with trees. Last time that came up as a question, and a few images over on the right-hand side, projects that we've done over the years, you know, the Lurie Garden over 20 years old, mixture of 2 to 4 feet soil depths. We're strategic, you know, the prairie planting there is in a shallower soil depth, and then we do have pockets where we have trees if you turned around in the garden. And then the Gates Foundation being another example, similar range and having a lot of good success with the big leaf maple and ash there. And then much more recently planted down in Portland, again, a similar kind of palette mixture of grasses and trees. Now, of course, the trees are much smaller. They're just freshly planted. But we're very conscious of the mixture of both soil depths as well as total soil volumes. And in this planting strategy, we have very large areas of planting. So the soil volumes are really great, which will allow those trees to thrive.
I think you wanted to help us understand the experience of that canopy. So this is when under the canopy, sort of in front of that cafe coffee thing that you saw, the coffee retail that you saw previously. So this is looking out at the current brewery. And I think what's really wonderful is, like, and one of the things we think would be really exciting about this is bringing a more lush landscape experience to this, but also having pathways and places to sit along it. We've also, you can sort of see the materiality of the facade in the covered area. So we have this timber ceiling with room for lighting that we'll get into more detail, and also a timber facade, so it's covered, it's back, and it's a nice warmer material. And then we have the precast concrete bees that are coming down into landscaping.
And one thing to point out too in this view, Thomas, the paving here, you see that pattern of basalt pavers, which are more of a geometric basalt column kind of shape here that transition as we move towards the pedestal pavers that are square in the plaza. So the basalt transitions from this shape to a square shape, which then feathers into the existing precast square pavers out there to try to blend the two seamlessly together.
So this is the same view in the evening. We'll show you in more detail a very specific lighting model we did to show how accurate this, but we're definitely lighting the structure, but also providing very generous pathway lighting for this sort of right of way through the project. And also happens to be that it's covered from the rain. So, but we think it'll be a really vibrant, lively space. And you have two pretty significant retail chunks that then link back into the other retail that we have in the project itself. Just a bit more detail on that, the plaza view that is you can sort of see the benches in the foreground. And then we've really opened up the corner at the base for some type of cafe type retail experience that can take advantage of that end of the covered arcade and then also spill out in the plaza. And you also notice the terrace space and the landscaping up above where the building kind of scales down, and we have a series of sort of indoor outdoor spaces that connect to the offices on that corner. And we'll get into more detail on exactly how this terracotta facade has evolved. We're really excited about the character of it and how it has a slightly special material character that also complements the wood structure. So, David, do you have anything to add on the landscape?
No, I don't.
Great. So just another view of that cafe space on the corner. I mean, you can't guarantee it's going to be a cafe, but I think the idea is that it would be an active retail type space that would open out into that corner. And then you have the arcade here and then the landscape elements. But you can sort of see how the scale of that is coming down to space. And as you may have, we may have mentioned previously, the second floor of the office building is where many of the conference rooms are located. And some of those at certain times will be open to visitors in certain events. So it's like it's a more accessible floor, will be more active.
And then moving to the south, this area again is similar in configuration to what we talked about before. Pulling the existing paver, pedestal pavers and that concrete paver around the corner of this stepped wall seat, more playful kind of stepped edge in relation to the daycare playground. And then you can see the transition there to the poured concrete sidewalk, which are really trying to have a legibility and connection back to the street grid, if you will, to really make it feel like a clear public path through. Which ties to the bike and fire lane beyond.
This is the bike access here. So we'll see that. You'll see that in a little bit. But then you guys asked for the edge to edge view from that of the playground. So you can sort of see on this facade, because it's a southern facing facade, we need more insulated wall area, but we also still want to maintain the character and the structure of the facade. So it closes down a little bit, but still, I think, very generous. And then there's a big cut here connected to a series of open terraces. And then the entry into the bike parking is right here. So I think that helps understand how the landscape steps up as we turn around the corner.
And then moving back into the fire lane over here. The fire lane itself is an exposed aggregate concrete. What we really wanted to do was not just have that full 20 plus foot swath of single material. So we're giving it a little bit more texture, darker tone, which will help it contrast with the poured in place concrete that is more the vocabulary of the sidewalk running into the site, and then matching up with the precast pavers in the plaza I just described. And then there will be removable bollards at the fire lane, and then one in that path of travel, just to make sure no car inadvertently drives onto the portion of the structure that's not rated for a vehicle, or certainly a fire truck. Next.
So this is a view a little farther down that path. So you have the bike entry here and then the path up, and this is the area that Dave's just describing where we're required to have the wider width for fire truck access. But this isn't something that cars can pull up on. It'll be fully pedestrian or bicycle path through the site. You can see there's actually quite a bit of an existing landscaping on one side with some mature trees and then the cut into the space. So the wood timber facade that you saw sort of wraps around behind the precast elements. And then this is a sort of high performance custom precast panel system that we've used on other projects that can be sandblasted and has a lot of texture. And we've used a product called Tactile, which you can look at in more detail, but it's a really beautiful, really precise material. So you can sort of see the elevational approach, and you actually have the ability to see right through the building to the other entry. And we really wanted to celebrate the bike entry as something that's equal to, it's not like you have to go down into the garage to get to the bike. You actually have the ability, there's going to be the ability to come in here with a bike and then ramp down, sort of part of the whole lobby experience. And you can see through there, that's that entry we saw on the other side.
And then over on 6th, you can see the same materiality transition around to the main plaza and entry area. Along the sidewalk, we're bringing planting along the edge of the building, helping negotiate the grade, and then having a linear lean rail adjacent the shuttle stop as a place to pause. It's pretty steep, so it doesn't seem like a great place for benches or seating integrated into that slope sidewalk, but the lean rail does pass through there.
Yeah, I was out there on site just recently, and it's surprising how steep this is. You know, there's actually quite a bit of grade. You think of it as more of a frontage, but it's a very, it's quite steep there. You asked for, you know, a couple of views. This is the view looking from southwest that shows the arcade, the connection here, and then this textured wall with landscaping kind of coming up. This is around 13 feet, and it goes to around 4 feet. Just so you understand the scale of that. So you're talking quite a bit of grade change. And then sort of the cutout on that corner to kind of change the scale and massing of the building, and you can see less. And then this is sort of spinning around the other way. So now you can see, you can see back down into the where the bike entry is, and then navigating that grade change with the new landscape. And also, I think, well, one of the things that's successful about the massing is bringing the scale of the building down at the corner where the pedestrians are coming in, and then this becomes a landscape terrace with areas above. So this is just a more close-up view of what that looks like, the terracotta, the timber, and the building landscaping.
Now, we've already walked through the materials in their current locations, but the next slides are just a summary of the material board that is on display. Keyed in this image is provided along with that material board if you're looking at the physical samples.
Have folks had a chance to see some of the materials, but I'll just run through them here. I mean, David, we can, when I go back or if you can.
I think the main thing is noted is we're integrating that basalt paving that feathers into the garden area to give it more texture and materiality, but certainly tying into the existing language of the sidewalk and area around the turn circle that's poured in place concrete, as well as the precast pavers that are the majority of that upper terrace area. And then you can see the more textured concrete, the exposed aggregate along the fire lane to give more texture and relief. And then that paver number two is what's proposed for the turn circle. And then the general palette of the benches with a modified wood and the metals of the various site components, the bike rack, the lean rail support, and then in a couple locations, there's a cane detection rail, a low bar just around the V column.
So I'll move on. If there are any questions into the lighting design, sort of more detailed analysis, because one of the things you asked for, and you know, obviously very important, but just sort of high level, we have you know, a series of bollard lights that you see here in red. So in this garden area, there's lighting up the pathways, and then the green are actually the existing campus pole lights. So some of those are existing, and we're continuing those through in some areas just for consistency across the whole campus. We also have a series of surface lights that light the underside of these benches that David pointed out, so there'll always be light at those bench areas. And then in the colonnade, you can see we have a series of spotlights, which you see in red, which are like aimed at the bees, so each bee is lit, and then we have downlights that light that whole area, so you have the balance between the two. It's not going to be this big shadow that you're looking out through. And then this is the rendering of what that would look like, so people understand. And we also did some, these are just photometric studies, you know, that a lighting designer provides to test out the actual quality of the lighting. So we did a couple of versions of this, but we thought this was the most effective and nicest. So I'm going to move on to like architectural concepts for the building. I mean, I think one of the most innovative aspects of this project is this a timber diagrid lateral system, which would be really innovative structural system that means that we don't need cores, and the structure, you know, itself is taking all the lateral forces. We have fewer interior columns, and We have long spans around 40 feet on the interior to create a lot of flexibility. But we think what's really exciting is that the timber sort of is expressed, you know, that you see both from the inside and from the outside. And using that as a sort of modular system, also we're excited that it'll potentially, you know, increase the speed of construction. And because we have that structure, thinking about the facade as a sort of an expression of the canopy, some of the inspirations are really, you know, the kind of branching character of trees themselves, and thinking about how that relates to experience from the inside, but also just taking it a step further and thinking about how the facade itself could have textures that reflect the kind of diversity of species of trees in the Northwest. And we looked at different profiles that are inspired by, you know, Douglas fir and red alder. And, you know, fir itself and trees themselves, because of that texture, they have that really iridescent light. And one of the things we talked about last time is looking at potentially bringing some more color and a glazed character. I don't know if you had the opportunity to see some of the samples we dropped off at City Hall. And we were looking at different options for color, like a lighter green, a darker green, kind of a deeper red-orange color, and even a more neutral gray. And what we landed on kind of is sort of darker forest green. The red was in a way interesting, but this building is literally right across the street from the housing on the right. So they already have this color. So it felt very odd to that would be match this piece that you see there on the right. And there is already a bit of a, you know, a green character to the project, but we thought we could maybe make it more special and specific and connected both to the Northwest and be comfortable sitting in this thing. So this is sort of where we landed, and we'll get into more detail just reviewing, but really a terracotta, rib terracotta facade with these cuts, with the ability to open up and have naturally ventilated spaces where you cut into the building. And then we have some metal panel. Because we need to limit the amount of glass that we can do, but we also think it brings the scale down and covers up some of the spandrel conditions. And then this is a view looking northeast, just kind of wrapping around, and then we'll get into the detail of the panels itself. So this is the general makeup of the facade. So we wanted to do something in terracotta. Terracotta is an extruded element. It's actually, a clay baked product. And one of the amazing things about it, because you can extrude it, you can give it a shape, and you can also put a glaze on it. But it's made up of components. And so we developed a ribbed texture where it varies from ribbed to smooth. So it'll give different character on from different perspectives. And you can sort of see that here where it's ribbed on this side and then smooth on the other. So it creates more character and more light play. So this is the basic component with the glass, and then a dark forest green panel, which would also be matching the frame of the window itself. So this is the view from below, the kind of character of that facade. And then kind of understanding how it actually works from the detail. And I think you hadn't had the opportunity to see some of the samples we dropped off. This is sort of the inspiration of the glaze can change character as it sort of drops into these ribs. So if you look at glazed pottery, it's really nice when you actually see the underlying material where the glaze, when you have a texture. So I don't know how many of you have been to City Hall and seen these, but we're really excited about the opportunities to work on the glaze for this with the manufacturer that we're working with. So these are also just, you know, the Douglas fir, you know, the wood itself for the ribs would be Douglas fir, which I think you're all familiar with. This is cross-laminated timber, so it's all sort of matching that wood species, which is really a regional native species to the Northwest, a neutral, transparent glazing, and then the color of the metal panel frame. So just going back to some of the views, just the components, but also focusing in on the storefront pedestrian condition. We have the precast elements that creates the transition from our wood structure above to the concrete structure below, and also can wear outside the plants. And then beyond that to sort of is a ribbed wood panel and then a timber glazing system. So you can sort of see that here, the elements, and then the how that would play out. So we're looking at a precast sandblasted light concrete for those, almost like a white concrete for those V-ribs, the glue lab storefront, which we've employed on a number of projects, and then a rib system that covers the opaque areas. So because it's covered and inside, we feel comfortable having this timber will wear well. So, and you know, it's okay that it wears a little bit. We've done this in other systems, you know, out throughout the Northwest. So the other piece that, you know, you've had a lot of conversation apart was the solid wall. And I think it was important for us to just understand the scale of it and what's driving the wall. And also like what, you know, is sort of the kind of code relative to solid walls and master plan. And these are the design guidelines from Kirkland. You're supposed to meet 2 out of 3 of these. In this case, we meet 3 out of 4. And I think, you know, there's basically vegetation along that entire wall. There's the lean rail. There's a seating area, which we connect to the bus stop. And then we want to create a custom high performance precast panel. So we've done this on another project that had great success. There's a product called Tactile that we've used where we're allowed to, we could actually precast it, sandblast it, and do the aggregate. And this is the, you know, along the bike parking here. This is 4 feet, and then the bike parking here. We have planting along most of this. And, you know, we have some exiting, but it's a sort of challenging condition, but we feel like this building is so open and civic on almost every facade that I think it's okay to have some areas that are not glazing or open, and then work with the grades. So this is the kind of character. This is a tactile panel. This is a custom panel that we're developing, and we're looking to do it in this diamond profile. That kind of relates to the shape of the facade, and you kind of see the detailing of how that works. So these are the terracotta baguettes that are extruded and put together, and then that connects to this panel. You know, in a previous iteration, we looked at making that a timber wall, but we just felt from a durability point of view that we would have more control and have a higher quality product that would be more durable over the long term to do it as like the sandblasted precast. And it also sort of ties into the kind of precast V's that we have that run around it. So you had questions about the landscaping of the terraces, you know, what they look like. You saw what the plantings in the renderings, but you can kind of see how the planting is laid out. So, you know, we have 4 terraces and each of them have perimeter planting. And then there is actually sort of what we call a mid-door naturally ventilated interior space that would just have heating and then you'd need to actually open it. and there's different ways that we can ventilate it with fans. But so there's these sort of what between indoors and outdoors, that's why we call it mid-door. So kind of creating the opportunity to be in an office building, but also occupy a space that isn't as ventilated when we have, you know, because of the particular climate we have in the Northwest. But if you need a little bit of heat, you still want to have the window open, that's possible. So those will be really active spaces. So we're excited about that opportunity. So you can sort of see the landscape here that kind of wraps around, and then the terrace itself, and then we have a series of operable doors. You can sort of see those on the north and south facade. They're pretty similar with the cuts. And then this is the two corners here. So we have the cut that faces the plaza and also faces 6th Street. It's a little bit bigger terrace, and then the planting wraps in that, like you saw on the plan. So they'll be visible from below. And then we have a guardrail height element with a really transparent stall, German stall mesh that we've used on another project that completely disappears from more than like 15 feet away. And we'll show you some images of a project we just recently completed with that mesh. I don't know how familiar you are with it, but you can kind of see it here. This is on the Adidas project, but you can sort of see when you get more than like 15 feet away, it's just almost invisible. So this meets the requirements that we need, but so we can have something that's a little higher, so we make sure that there's no issues of safety, but you can, it's very, very transparent and light. So just wanted to kind of give you a diagram of where we have a green roof, and then where we have the penthouse, the mechanical screen, and where we have the PV panels. So the PV panels are on the south side of the buildings, and we have tie-offs along that perimeter. And then a skylight in the middle of the space that goes all the way through the building. You know, just kind of playing off the diagrid triangular shape that we have throughout the building, we were thinking that the mechanical screens could be a perforated V-shape that just comes around at top and be, in a way, playful with the light, sort of a lighter color. And in areas they would be solid. So this is just sort of an example of what that could look like rendered. So I'm going to run through the details, and just, you asked for, you know, these are just the elevations of the buildings, so you can understand scale. The east elevation, the north elevation. We're going to cut a section right through that center element right there. The west elevation, and then the south elevation. And what we're doing is actually, you know, dealing with the fact that we don't want as much exposure to the south. So this is the section sort of through the main element of the buildings. And I talked about those terraces. These are then the mid-door spaces, and some of them are double height. And then my guess is the details 01, 02, 08, 07 are probably the ones that you're most interested in. But we have all those details that we could kind of flip through. And if people have questions, I won't go into glorious detail on each one, but we can always come back to them if you'd like. So, you know, this is the detail, sort of the retail entry with screen. You can sort of see the various elements. This is the top of the soffit here with the timber. So you can sort of see where that's keyed to. And this is the walking surface. And then we have these recesses where the where you go into the retail interior. This is the timber curtain wall system. It sits up on a concrete curb. I think you saw those previous renderings, and I can come back to them. And then this is the sort of top of the arcade. This is the detail of the tactile precast panel, which you see here, the base in the corner. And then this is the plan detail of the facade with the two baguettes. They call them baguettes. I don't really know why, but that's what they call them for terracotta, the extruded elements that create the sort of vertical corner of the building there. And then this is the horizontal with the metal panel and then the witness system. So I'm just gonna kind of, this is a typical floor condition with the terracotta, metal panel, and then the top of the glazing. And then this is the timber diagrid element. You can see it here. This is the terrace planter detail. So we have, you know, quite a bit of depth. So those will be really nice, you know, planter opportunities. And I think Gigian and David talking about doing something that's a little more colorful, a little more life and seasonal in those areas. And then this is sort of the base condition. We looked, we, you know, where we're kind of continuing that element, and then it ties back into the expression of the precast V's, and then there's the timber roof here. So you can sort of see that transition. So it helps the building, I think, in a way feel a little bit lighter and elevated. And then this is on the other side with the panels as it comes down into those pieces here. So this is the concrete wall base. This is at the curtain wall, which is more of a kind of flush system at the top as it comes up. And then this is the curtain wall system where the cuts are cut into that terracotta system. So I think pretty straightforward, high performance window wall system. So I think these minor modifications to the curriculum master plan, these were already things that Tony talked about. So I'm gonna kind of skip through these unless people wanna talk about them again. And then I wanted to touch on that the KU signage, it's basically just an extension of the established master signage plan for the KU campus, which has already been approved. So that's what we'll be using. And this just gives you kind of an overview of some of that plan and how this building will then extend that through the campus. So there won't be really any major changes. I mean, we'll have some signage for the client, and, you know, and post some signage for the retail, and that will all be part of that existing master plan. So in terms of sustainability, these, you know, there's been a lot of focus on that, and I think the main focus has been on the mass timber, which is actually a pretty heavy lift to do in terms of the structure. And then really looking at regional forestry, we've actually been out to some of the forests in the region talking directly about sourcing. And you know, another real focus has been maximizing on-site water with rainwater collection and looking at gray water reuse, coordinating with the city of Kirkland on what's possible in that. And then looking at an all-electric building, rooftop solar, high-performance facade, and then integrating this naturally ventilated spaces into the building as common spaces. So just, you know, the view of the building in the evening, and we have the SketchUp model that we're happy to bring up if you want to look at specific things or have an overview. So, but maybe before we bring that up, because it can take a little while to load, I'm happy to answer any, you know, questions, or we can figure out how we want to proceed from here. So, but thank you. We hope that you will approve the project. We're very hopeful for that. I just wanted to add that at the end. And, you know, we really appreciate, you know, the process that we've been going through to get to this point.
Thank you guys very much. I think you mentioned that you had a prepared video of the SketchUp model. Would that be easier to pull up and run around rather than the actual model?
They're both fine, but yeah, I can show you, I'll show you that. So maybe that's easy. So it's just, I don't know, it's sort of a fly through above it. Does this help?
Yeah, I think it does actually.
So it just sort of rotates around the building. We can go back to the views just so you can understand the whole structure. We can do this in SketchUp too, it's just a lot clunkier. One thing I want to point out is the energy code in Washington has changed to become much stricter. So what was allowed previously in terms of glazed facades is no longer allowed. So that's something to keep in mind, you know, people, and we think that's a good thing, right? It's a more energy efficient building, a more punched opening, so.
So how is, will the new energy code affect, I guess, the proposed glazing on this?
Well, I think, you know, where you could do like a, potentially a spandrel panel, it doesn't meet the energy code. So you don't have insulation in that spandrel panel. It has to be a fully insulated panel. That's what we found. And it's, you know, it's probably the strictest in the United States, I would guess. So does that help, or do you also want to see to go into the SketchUp model?
That satisfied me. Does any of the board want to see the SketchUp model?
I'm good.
I'm good too.
Okay. Shall I stop here, or is there specific things you'd want to go back to?
So we can open up to any questions from the board members, the applicant.
I believe, Adam, that first we have to go through the audience. There's anyone there?
Sure. I guess, does the audience or the public have any questions? How's our attendance? Do we have anyone out there?
Yeah, it looks like we have 7 attendees, but I don't see anyone, Adam, with their hands raised currently.
Okay. All right, then I guess we'll move back to any questions from board members or the applicant.
I will go first.
All right, Ting.
Yeah, so thank you for the nice presentation first. My first question is regarding the lighting of the building at night. I heard for office buildings, it requires automatic shut off of the electricity if it's not in use. I'm just wondering what it looks like at night, if the building will be completely dark or partially lit. Because you don't really have blinds planned for this building, right? It's so transparent. I kind of hear you, Thomas.
I think it's a good question. I mean, you know, there are specific energy codes that, you know, require a certain amount of lighting to be turned off at certain times. You know, I think the lighting and that's something we can't control, you know, in terms of the office lighting, but there will be, I think, a fair bit of general lighting in the kind of common spaces, which will remain on even from a life safety point of view. The lighting at the grade level, you know, will be, you know, on, you know, pretty much all the time in the evening. So that will not be on sensors. I mean, I think when the majority of people are out, the building will be, you know, very active and transparent, you know, and I believe, you know, I know that the client has events planned for the evening, especially on the second level, where there'll be a lot of activity. That's sort of where we've kind of left the most active areas closest to the ground plane. But I think it, you know, it's a good question about how much lighting we can actually be allowed to leave on. but I think I'm very confident that at the times where this space is being occupied, the building will be lit up and visible and active. So it's, you know, in the middle of the night, yes, it will be dark, but the areas that and there'll be less light in it, but the arcade itself will always be lit. So I think you have to just think about it that way. But you know, there's nobody, there's less likely to be people out there at you know, 1 a.m. So I think that's a trade-off.
It's just the building is 6 stories high, and then you got apartments and then residents around it. And then you don't want to see too much.
They probably don't want the lights on, you know. So I think, you know, if I was in a residential thing across it, I don't think I'd want the lights blazing in the middle of the night. So that, I think there's trade-offs there, but it's a good question. I'm not, I think what would be good is to look at the existing buildings right now. Maybe we could just have a quick look at that. But I think this building will be very welcoming because we have the arcade will always be lit in the evenings.
Mm-hmm. So for all these four facades, all these glazing have different levels of transparency, right? I looked through the package.
They're all the same in terms of transparency.
They're all opaque.
The glazing itself has the same transparency level, yes. Are you talking about the size of the apertures in the different openings? Is that, I'm just trying to understand your question.
No, I'm talking about how clear the glass is.
The glass, it will always be the same in each. It's clear. I mean, it's not that we're not varying the clarity of the glass on different facades. We're just changing the aperture opening slightly. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I just saw in the package somewhere it says different sides. For example, the south side will be more open to gain the daylighting or something like that.
We're on the south side, which is probably the least visible facade. We have slightly smaller windows because we're trying to limit heat gain coming into the building because it's so bright. On the north side, where there isn't the direct solar gain, it's very open. It's the most open. So we're trying to sort of tune the facade to the environmental conditions of that exposure. So you can see on this facade, the windows are the largest and most open. And then if you go to the facade, might be good to see in the elevation, but on the south facade, which, I mean, there's a building in front of this whole area. That's also the housing is the closest. These are smaller, but these are also in conference rooms, mostly on this area. We've tried to kind of make it less a place where there's office occupied. So that's, this has the, the least amount of glass on that south facade, but that's also just from a kind of environmental point of view. While on the east, it's still pretty large because it's just morning light.
I like the south side arrangement. It actually provides more privacy. I mean, have more privacy concern to the residents to the south.
Yeah, for sure.
And then if you can go back to that rendering where you can see from view from the plaza.
Yeah.
I have a question about the rooftop mechanic screen. So if you look at the upper corner, that seems like to be placed real close to the edge. And it's quite visible, right, from the ground view, from the deck.
I mean, it's set back, it's set back relatively far, you know. I mean, you will always have rooftop mechanical screens visible on these buildings. It's easy to look at just because it's a static image, but I think it's, if you look at the roof plan, which I believe is, you could see it's, we've set it back as much as we can, you know, in these corners. So yes, I think it'd be visible, but we're also going to make that something that's a nice screen element. So it's just the nature of having, you're going to have these types of things visible above the roof.
So for this building, you don't have any roof or deck runoff?
No.
Through So they will all be internal, huh?
Yeah.
That's nice. And then my last question is the housekeeping items. I'm wondering how you can arrange for the trash pickup through.
Sorry, you were looking for how we do the trash.
Trash pickup.
Oh yeah, there's a whole, we might have to get into the drawings here, but there's a loading dock below grade. It's a huge logistic areas, which is actually accessible from another street right behind the market. So I'd have to get to like an overall plan, but basically trash. It's all accessible from below. There's like huge loading dock below the building.
Yeah, as long as it's not visible from, you know, pedestrians' perspective, that's fine. No, I don't need to look into the detail.
Yeah.
And then, my last question is about the wayfinding of this building. I think there's a diagram I glanced through somewhere in the design packet.
For wayfinding?
No. Yes, the signs.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole, I think I mentioned that there's a whole existing approved wayfinding system for the entire campus that this building would then use in terms of, you know, right now there is a wayfinding system that's been approved. Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I understand, you know.
And that's correct. There's a Kirkland Urban approved master signage plan that the signage for this building would then incorporate into that with directories on the campus so that the campus itself would have this cohesive signage. And then obviously the retail would have its own signage and there may be some building signage, but all of that's really spelled out distinctly in the master signage plan as far as the guidelines and how to kind of fit within what's already been established for the campus. So we're just going to work within those parameters for this building.
So it's a whole, I mean, I think it's like a book. So, you know, it's been approved. So we didn't really want to take up space on that, but everything that we're doing signage-wise will follow that plan, or if it has to deviate, obviously we talk to the city about that, it approved.
Well, thank you. Those are my questions for now.
Yeah, thank you.
I can go next. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for the presentation. I think that the applicants team has made a terrific job addressing the concerns that we had. I have a couple of questions for you. Can you go to page 66, please? I think it's the south facade elevation.
Yeah.
Looking at the plans at the side plan, I noticed that there's an opening in the floor next to the facade to the where number 4 is. So the floor has an opening and it goes through the levels below. I'm just wondering, how is that secured? Are you planning on adding a railing? Is that going to have some sort of security mesh, or what are you guys trying to do at that area?
It's the garage ventilation. So that will be a great grading, locked grading. So it's just to allow the ventilation for the garage exhaust or intake, I think it is actually.
Okay, so it's just gonna have a metal grate and with any type of finish, or it's just the regular?
My sense is it'll be a galvanized egg crate grate that's flush with the concrete. You know, I think we have to find it. We thought it'd be nicer that it's in the ground plane there. It goes directly into the garage than trying to throw it through the building. So,
all right. Sounds good. And the second question is the spandrel glass at the cuts. I don't think it's so a specific finish for that. So is the intent to have like a light gray spandrel?
Yes,
over there.
Yeah, I think we have, you know, we've done, so this, I can't, basically it's basically got it's like this glazing, but it has an opacified, you know, layer on the back of the glass. So it's like a spandrel element, right? Is that what we're doing, Dannon? I can't remember. Are we doing a whole box spandrel?
I would do it like back painted glass, essentially. So I think that, you know, you'll basically see through the glass the same color, and there'll be a layer beyond that that's painted a lighter color. But I think we're like tuning the specificity of that.
We found color. Like a light warm gray is usually the nicest. So, and that's sort of what we're anticipating to do at the spandrel.
So does that mean that you guys will match the finish that is kind of like depicted in the renderings?
Yeah, it's hard to match it exactly, but I think it'll be this sort of lighter color. And you know, it'll be reflective. I think you might not even notice that it's there, you know, with glass. So yeah. I think we're just trying to show what's glass and what's opaque.
Okay. And one last item. I was taking a look at the planting plans. I was comparing it with the previous packet that the design review board received. I noticed that there were some adjustments to the planting selection in terms of trees and other vegetation species. So I'm just wondering what's the main decision that the applicant took in regards to adjusting the selection of plants and trees for different areas.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, the roof terraces, there's some species probably added in for that, but the main selection is just refining some of the ground plane species mixes, and then the tree species, the general strategy of the alders, and then a few Doug fir and red cedar are consistent with where we were before. So, you know, at this stage, that's pretty typical that we're making a couple adjustments in exactly what the, you know, the shrub layer mixes are.
But I believe that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that none of the green areas were reduced.
Oh, in terms of the footprints of the planting?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Oh, yeah. Sorry. I thought I misunderstood. Yeah.
No, you answered the first question. I guess that the second question was still
No, they were actually expanded a little bit, and I made that comment while talking through this area. What we wanted to do here was just bring a little bit more of that, like pockets of planting with seeding integrated in, to get more of that feeling of a garden before, especially this corner by the retail was more open. But because of the nature of the V columns and movement through, we actually thought it was better to have more presence of planting closer to the plaza to frame that. And that allowed us to get a little bit more seating integrated into that. So that was the primary shift. And then along the south area too, we just extended one of the planters up a little bit further.
Yeah, I had just that question because I was taking a look at one of the renders. That perspective is great.
Yeah.
Where like you have the ferns next to the diagrid, the precast columns.
Yep.
But I think that in the plan, in the previous plan that Thomas or you guys had, it showed the layer of landscape pushed away from the building. So I'm just wondering if the renderings are out of date or if the plan is out of date. Because right now there, you can see there the ferns.
Yeah, the planting should be coming unless something got inadvertently switched in one of the plans. But this graphic plan represents that intent. So the planting is coming around those columns.
Yeah, I think I didn't see the projection of the floor above. But yeah, you're right. The diagrid actually lands where the
We brought the plant a little bit more in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's to then we didn't have to have more of the cane rail and that kind of thing. So the planting is helping to mark that transition. And it just you know, brings more of that garden layering into this overall space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I apologize if that wasn't clear.
No worries. Thanks for clarifying. That's all that I have. Thanks.
Thank you.
I mean, just high level, the planning has probably increased since what you saw last time. Amy, you have your hand raised. I don't know who's in charge of calling hands.
I guess, I was just waiting to see if Carlos is done. I agree with my fellow DRB members that you guys did excellent job with definitely preparing very clear, very easy to follow graphic materials. I only have some minor questions and, just really more for verification. So you're not proposing any kind of artwork for this project, correct?
Yeah, art is, maybe Tony can chime in on this as well, but art is essentially a master plan, entire master plan sort of district requirement as we understand it. And if there were to be an art component, which I think I heard previously, and I might let Steven speak to this, who's an owner's representative, there might be an art component in the future, but that at this time, we're really looking for building approval. And if that comes in, it would be like a separate project. And I think it's really a district requirement for the art, not specific to this Kirkland Urban East building. I don't believe there's any requirement around this specific building to have art. And Tony, if there's any difference in your understanding of it, please feel free to correct, or John.
No, that was my understanding. It's as part of the master plan, it basically says that they should incorporate local art, that kind of thing into the project. It's really not a element in the design guidelines per se. There's not something that would kind of regulate the art. It would just basically say, obviously if they have an installation area, they want to install art and things like that within the courtyard, that's fine. There's just not a specific guideline to address that. So.
Thank you. Are you proposing any additional bike racks in the exterior on your site?
There are bike racks on the exterior that I think David.
Yeah, there's a few bike racks just on the southern edge of that drop-off circle, which would support a visitor to the building. Obviously, there's a significant number of bike racks within the facility for those working here. So there's some additional added to the plaza.
Okay. In your ground floor drawings, you show cafe seating. And I don't know if maybe I missed it in your landscape materials plans and drawings. I didn't see, those types of furniture. And is the idea that that's just kind of an interpretation of what could go in there?
Yeah, it's the intent that's that likely cafe area, but typically that kind of furnishing is provided by a tenant in this kind of scenario. So the project is not proposing that, which is why it wasn't included.
Okay. On 6th Street, when you look at the site plan, you're showing some metal panel or panels that I think there might be electrical vaults or some metal panels and
here
in the ground.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say south? No, I meant east on 6th Street.
Uh huh. There are some utilities along the sidewalk of 6th, as would be typical in a lot of sidewalks. There's not any special treatment that we've been able to have on them, other than we're trying to make sure where possible they land in logical places and allow the planting to continue.
Okay. How about on the east elevation where you have the blank, the shuttle drop off and the
this elevation here and then
that's a bike drop off.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, the bike parking entrance. So yeah, so can you show us the site plan for this section? Or the landscape plan?
Yeah, I can. There.
Let me see if I can find the right page.
Is this the one 32? Is this what you were looking for? The east elevation and the landscape plan for the east elevation?
Yeah. But this is the colored version. There's a black and white version that actually shows little squares on the planter area.
There are a couple utility covers that are existing utilities that have to be incorporated into the site. And a couple of those do occur along that corner, which we're being careful to try to screen as much as we can around them with planting and obviously avoid a tree landing on them. But that's pretty typical in when we have this kind of complexity of utilities that are existing within this kind of right-of-way condition.
Yeah.
So, is that the question? Are there any vault covers through here?
Yeah. So I'm just trying to understand because your drawings show a very lush landscaping. And I know if you have those vaults, you're not going to have any plants in those areas.
Well, there's these ones.
There's a couple smaller lids that stick up, but we're able to plant around those. And that's why, again, we've coordinated to be able to make sure we can get layers of plants around them.
Okay.
So I think the idea is that we have a access, but then you could plant around it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, we're always very conscious of those things because we don't like to have them, but it's just there are a couple of them there, and we're being really strategic about trying to shift them off the sidewalk as much as possible and, you know, do the best with those existing conditions.
Okay. And some minor design details. What is the depth of the glazed terracotta, like for your profiles?
Is it like, again, I don't want to, I've got to go to the detail, but I think it's 8 inches. That's what I recall.
I'm sorry.
I just have to.
It's there's a potential range for that, and we're still working with the terracotta manufacturers to understand exactly what that depth is. I think these drawings are shown at this point extending out around 10 inches. If you go back, it's done. I think it's dimensioned in some drawings, other in the drawing set.
Yes, it's basically, let me see if I can find a detail that shows that depth. And, I mean, it's pretty substantial.
And real quick, where are the terracotta manufacturers located?
The one that we're talking to is actually located in Germany, Schildon. There's one Boston Terracotta on the East Coast. There's one in Pacific. It just depends on their sophistication and familiarity with the product. But, you know, terracotta has a long history. It just depends on, you know, the manufacturer that you're working with and their ability to do larger shapes. So we get quotes from and talk to all of them. So that gives you a sense of where they're located. There used to be a lot more, unfortunately, because there's a lot of terracotta in Portland and Seattle and Los Angeles. A lot of that came out of Pacific clay outside of LA, but they don't actually manufacture terracotta there anymore. I hope that maybe if there's enough people see terracotta as a new material, that we'll have more robust manufacturing in the United States. Right now, there's one manufacturer in the U.S.
And my last question, I don't know if you have a site cross-section to show the adjacent buildings, but with your solar panels on the roof, are they going to be visible from the adjacent apartment building, or is your building roof taller than
it's
the apartment next door?
We're taller than the adjacent building. I don't think it would not be visible.
Okay. All right. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any other questions from the board? Brad?
Yeah, I'll jump in.
See the section here if that helps you.
Thank you. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah, T and Amy took a lot of my questions. I just have one left, and it might also be partly with the city chiming in about kind of the curbless, you know, area, that roundabout. You know, we have the rest of the project that has a kind of a similar layout, you know, where it's all seamless and just protected with bollards and, you know, just kind of changing material. Has that been successful in the rest of the project so far? You know, I personally like it, but I don't know if there's been any sort of confusion or high rate of accidents or anything like that. Any feedback from other people, users, you know, to Kirkland Urban, you know, is that a direction that we want to kind of keep pushing, you know, future developments towards? How's the reception been on that?
I think that's a question for the city, not for us, right?
Well, I guess for you, are you using this? You're not using the same materials, are you, for, you know, for your curbless areas as, you know, in the lower portion of Kirkland Urban, are you? It sounds like you're using existing concrete, another type of concrete, but is there any texture to it?
Yeah, I'll explain that a little bit more. So, down on the lower plaza, it's all poured in place concrete of a couple different tones. And then there's a detectable warning and then a bollards as well. And a transition where it goes, yeah, if you hold right on that one, there's a transition from the primary drive area, which is a concrete condition there. And then it transitions with a dark band of textured paving. It's just stamped concrete. We're using actual pavers where we transition from that more road-like condition. And that's where it goes from being a curbed condition to a flush condition. So it's almost like a little bit of a, you know, a speed hump, if you will, as it transitions. I think one of the biggest differences that we have here compared to the lower is this is not through traffic. So it's only if you're coming around, you're doing the turn around the drop circle and dropping someone off and coming back out. So there is no, you know, faster moving through traffic. And then we're adding also pavers in that darker gray central portion to give additional texture and tonal difference. And then additionally, we're using, and we've used these before in projects, the little tactile dots that wrap around that. So if you're visually impaired, you have a cue that you're moving to a transition where there could be vehicles.
You can sort of see them, I think, was it one forward or back? Yeah, here. These are the tactile dots. Oh. And then.
So we've found though that the key issues to be aware of is one, you know, our car is going to know to go slow, which we think because it's a drop-off condition and the multiple layers of material changes, those are all cues, as well as it's not through traffic. And then two, that we have that tactile as well as visually contrasting material at those transition areas for someone's visually impaired. Those are two of the key things that we're always conscious of.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and Tony, I think, didn't Public Works review this plan and didn't have any concerns with it?
Correct, yeah, they took a look at this and have no issues with the design. So.
This Randall, I'll jump in real quick. I really don't have a lot of comments other than thank you. It's a great presentation. Coming back, I know that going into it, we kind of warned you that, you know, make sure you've got a finished product. And I think it's a very finished product. And And I'm really kind of enjoying the building. I think it's going to be nice. I like terracotta. I don't quite know how bringing terracotta in from Europe is sustainable, but I won't go there. So just a matter of the terracotta on it is a very nice feature that actually does tie with some of the buildings in downtown. No, but I think it's very well done. That's all I've got to say.
Thank you, Randall. And I assume that the Mass Timber supplier is a regional outfit that you probably work with on other projects. I know there's a lot of Austrian Mass Timber suppliers. I hope we're not going through Austrian forests.
No, I can't speak for the client, but you know, all our projects, we've been able to use regional timber in the Northwest, so we're maybe a little bit unusual that way, but that's something we're really working through, that there's a direct forest connection. Doesn't mean it's always easy, but I think it's the right way to do it. So I think one of the things we really try to work, we're already talking to suppliers. I think the region is broader. It's the whole Northwest, Washington, Oregon, even Southern Canada, there's that all biospheres where we're looking. So I think there's a commitment on the other side, but I can't speak for them on that.
Any other questions from the board? I guess, could we move into deliberation? Anyone want to kick that off?
I can start, Adam. I think that from what we discussed on the last meeting to what the applicant presented today, they have made major improvement. They have addressed all or most of our questions in a positive way. They presented the 3D model, which helps the board understand the scale and the complexity of each facade with different fenestration sizes, which I personally like. The material selection, I think, is appropriate for this type of building, and it's gonna be a pretty significant one since Kirkland doesn't have a lot of mass timber construction around. So hope this sets a precedent for any future applicants or projects that are more inclined into the sustainability portion rather than just the aesthetics of it. I guess that it's just a good integration. So overall, I think I'm satisfied with the information that I was able to review and the comments that the applicant provided along with you all's. I think that's a thumbs up for me.
I can go next, but I just wanted to ask the staff, are we supposed to answer the questions during deliberation? This is where we respond to that.
The questions that were
listed in the staff report.
In the staff report. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you need to formally go through each of those questions. I think it's more kind of for your guys' discussion and personal analysis and whether or not you feel that they've met each of those questions that we outlined. So.
All right. I'm very pleased with the result of this project and the process that we went through with previous design review board, a review and comments, and I think that the applicant listened very well and was very responsive. I definitely have a lot of positive elements, or I would like to call out, you know, and give credit where credit is due, because this is such a unique and special building in a way. So if you guys can bear with me, you know, I'm just going to read off some of the positives that I, you know, and all of these, I think, contributed to not only in creating a very unique building, but at the same time, while it's distinctive, it also blends very well with the rest of Kirkland Urban. It also, you know, between the ground floor treatment of the building and the scale, the modulation, the use of materials in a very thoughtful way, I think all of these on a broad stroke has really proven that this project is very responsive to the environment and also sensitive to the pedestrian experience. So some of the particular things that, you know, I think really made this building stand out is the use of, again, the selection of the materials. You know, I commend them for proposing terracotta, and I would definitely support the glazed green terracotta color, and also the deep profile. You know, right now it's at 10 inches, so hopefully that doesn't get value engineered later on. Because if you look at all the elevation drawings, you'll see deep shadows, which makes the building read differently than if, let's say, you change the profile of that terracotta later on. I also commend the use of the basalt paver. It really contrasts very well with the smooth and lighter colored wood and, you know, the diagonal concrete columns. Again, fantastic attention to detail. And I don't know if that was intentional, but I really like the complete composition of the different interplay of the colors and textures on the ground floor. Also commend the applicant for the wood, what did you call them again? The grills, or they really added a lot, and the wooden soffit added a lot in adding warmth and again, improving the pedestrian friendly environment along the ground floor. Adding the trees and the lush vegetation on the plaza area also provided the whole campus, the Kirkland Urban Campus, a really nice break from all the pavement. I think this is going to be a great respite from all the pavement and the other parts of the project or the campus. Along the south elevation, I think, you know, opening up the bike entry and celebrating it is such a great move, even though technically that's an alley. Giving it a little bit more openness actually in so many ways compensated for the blank walls. And if you look at the elevation, there's a wonderful balance of both transparency and opaqueness on that ground floor level on the south side. What else? Another detailing and good use of material, the mesh on the second level where you have the terraces. I hope that you will push this concept further and in so many ways, it reminds me of hanging gardens, because the panels or the railings will be quote unquote invisible. And so again, from the ground floor, what you're going to see, it's almost like a floating garden, and then all the meeting spaces on that level, which again complements very well what's going on the ground floor. As far as among the questions that staff has given us, does the building have enough horizontal and vertical modulation? I believe it has sufficient modulation. It's definitely very different in its treatment of the modulation, but I also think that this building is relatively smaller than all the other buildings in the campus. And so the location of the cutouts are appropriate, and they're deep enough that when you're looking at the building on different views, you actually almost read it as two buildings instead of one. So I think that it's done a great job in creating that modulation and creating a smaller scale with the modulation. As far as with the blank walls, I think the only section that I'm still concerned with is on the 6th Street side. And this is just a minor suggestion, or I should say, maybe a minor treatment that could potentially improve that section better. While I did not have any concern with the alley section since it's internal, I still think that 6th Street is a public face. And one of the things that I thought about is maybe with the plantings, you could incorporate some kind of interpretive signs to, again, signal to the public that what you have done here is meant to tell the story of water and how this water and the wetland and the connection to the lake is interpreted through your landscaping. So one of my favorite linear park in Washington, D.C. is this very small park next to the National Museum of Natural History. And it's a butterfly park. And it's right next to the freeway entrance or expressway entrance. And it's just a lovely little spot. So obviously this is not the same type of space, but the concept is what I hope you can incorporate into your landscaping on the 6th Street side. I'm ready to approve this project.
Amy, that's a very comprehensive summary. It's very impressive. I want to say I really like the design, the simplicity of the design since the first meeting. And it's not just simple, but it's very elegant with all these subtle, complicated variations put in landscaping and put in the building facade. I believe the design team put in tremendous effort to make this project so complete for us to review. I'm really happy to see this project. I'm looking forward to see when it's actually being built. And I would really appreciate a VIP tour when it's done. Thank you. I'll pass to another board member.
And I think we can make that a condition of approval, maybe, that we have to do a hard hat tour, maybe. I think Amy hit all the high notes. I'm really impressed with the level of detail that's been put in here. I've got nothing but good things to say about it. I'm really excited to see this one come together. Did we hit everybody? Anybody else?
Move to approve.
You have a motion?
I make a motion that we approve as presented this evening.
Second.
Moved, seconded. We do a roll call vote for that?
Correct.
Randall Brand?
Yes.
Carlos Castaneda?
Yes.
Brad Brown?
Approve.
Tin Cheng? Chen, sorry.
Approve.
Adam Crane?
Approve.
And Amy Tars?
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. You're
welcome. Congratulations, you guys. We appreciate the effort.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. We really enjoyed your presentation.
Oh, great. It's late.
Just one administrative thing for the architects. If I know there were some minor changes made between the submitted package and the one that was presented tonight. So if you could submit the package that was presented tonight via the My Building Permits, and then that will be the approved plan set.
All right. Everyone have a good evening, unless there's more time that we need to. Is there anything else that we need to do? Tony, are we good? What we should say?
No, I think that we can move on to our next items.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Good night.
Good evening. Goodbye.
Next up, administrative reports. We have the election of officers. Is that correct?
Correct. So we have two terms that are ending. We have Shoshana's is ending at end of March, and Adam's. I know, of course, corresponding with Shoshana, so she is reapplying to extend her term, which is great news. And Adam, due to family matters, will not be pursuing another term. So thank you for all your time, Adam. You've been great fun on the board. Yeah.
I might show up as an attendee and make some noise.
So the way what I was thinking, I think I emailed you all. So as far as Shoshana, because last year we only had 5 meetings, and I think it would be worth it for her to continue as the chair. I did ask her about that, and she says she's totally willing. So that's up for the board to discuss if they would like to nominate her again as the chair. So that's totally fine. So what that means with Adam, Adam's term ending, is that we'll need a new vice chair. So we'll have a discussion, maybe a nomination or two, and see who's interested in being the vice chair. So the way it would work too is typically what will happen is at the end of the year or the beginning of next year, the vice chair will then, in all likelihood, become the chair. So that's kind of the grooming period for becoming the chair. So with that, I'll turn it over back to Adam for the discussion.
Sure. I guess we can open it to nominations for vice chair. And John, am I allowed to do a nomination, even though I'm
anyone leading? Is allowed. Yes. How about okay. We start with the easy one with the chair?
Yeah.
I
say we let Shoshana continue on. I nominate her, I guess, to continue.
I'd second that.
Did you do a roll call vote on that? Or?
No, I think this is one where you can just do kind of like what we did with the minutes, if anyone objects.
Yeah. And any objections to her continuing? No, I think everybody's okay with it.
Okay. All right, so now vice chair. Feel free to nominate and discuss.
Anyone want to fire away on a nomination?
I nominate Randall Brand for vice chair.
Second that.
I have a question. What's my length of term? I'm trying to see when my term's over. So
let's look that up really quick. Randall, March 2023. It's about a little more than a year from now.
Okay. The only thing I'd have on that nominee is that if vice chair is expected to move into the chairman position, I may not extend. I don't know. I haven't made a decision on that. So,
and I would like to nominate someone else also. I'd like to nominate Ting because she expressed interest, was it a year or two ago? COVID's messed my years up, but for vice chair. So I'd nominate Ting if she was interested.
Thank you. I really have too much in my plate.
Okay.
I would nominate Amy, and I think Amy's second meeting, and then so much effort she put in, you know, summarize everything from this checklist. Sure. It's very impressive.
Well, my concern is I've only attended two meetings. I'm too new, don't you think?
The sky is the limit. So you can make this. You want.
Why not Carlos? We're just going to go through everyone.
Yeah, I think that brings it all the way back to Carlos. So, Carlos, would you want to do it?
Yes, I can accept that.
I would nominate Carlos.
I second the motion. Okay, go ahead.
Any other nominations or any objections to Carlos? I think we're all happy about that. So I guess we can approve Carlos as the vice chair going forward.
All right. Congratulations, Carlos.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
We should go celebrate.
There's a big raise involved.
Nice.
Thank you for stepping in, Carlos.
No worries, Amy.
Okay, next up, Governor Smart City Award. So I don't know if you all were aware, but I put in a nomination for the Governor Smart City Award for a project fulfilling a comprehensive plan. And I put that in last July, I think it was July, and we won an award. So you'll see in the packet, I did a little presentation at the January 18th meeting. I think you should guys check it out. It's pretty cool. The city also did put together a video with the mayor regarding Village at Totem Lake. And the developers showed up to receive the award. So that's CenterCal and Fairfield. And someone from the Department of Commerce came, presented the award. So it was really well done. And check it out, because for those of you that are not that aware of Wood Village, the history of it, I mean, the planning on that started in early, 2002, 2003? And for those of you that were on the board at the time, not at that time, but there was a conceptual master plan that was approved by the board, several iterations of that, some, you know, numerous modifications. And eventually the conceptual design conference and designer conference for both phases and multiple meetings and similar discussions like what we did tonight with Urban. So a lot of work went into it, and the board did receive a certificate. So I'll forward it to you all. It was addressed to the chair. So it was addressed to Shoshana, but it was on behalf of the entire board. And also other city officials were recognized, and other planning commission and so forth, and the city council. So it was a pretty big deal. It was really neat to see and to be acknowledged for such a pretty neat project. And how much, I don't know if you've heard, but I've heard from friends and other folks how fun it is to hang out there and, you know, go eat or shop and all that. It truly is like a vibrant center. It's becoming that. So congratulations.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, John, for making the effort of applying. Yeah. And you know, I live very close to Totem Lake, to the village of Totem Lake. And so that's my go-to place for shopping. And I was just there this weekend because they had a lion dens. And so they've really done a great job with the programming of the outdoor spaces. There's always something going on. And it's really, really, yeah. And a lot of people in the community, you know, on Facebook, I read their comments. They all love what's going on there and all the new restaurants that's opening up. I'm just curious, is there any plans of redeveloping the Ross side?
Unfortunately, they have a long, very, 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 very long term lease, right? As part of the, but they did do a,
yeah,
a lot. Do you remember that?
I remember it. Yeah. Yeah. It was a shame.
But in terms of the, terms of the programming of the public space, I don't know, Brad, do you remember that too? We spent multiple meetings on the programming of that space. So kudos to the board for sticking to their guns on that.
Everything down to the type and size of paver and color. And then they came back with like, try to sneak in some, you know, decision to, you know, VE it out, you know, and it was a lot of meetings too. It was very similar to Kirkland Urban, you know. Multiple buildings, you know, a lot of multimodal transportation to consider. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ting?
Oh, John, is your presentation recorded? You said it's on January 17th?
Oh, January 18th. If you go to 18th. The, I think the link, you can watch the recorded meeting. And you can just click directly on item 4B, and it would just play that item.
Okay.
Oh, is that the DRB or a city council meeting?
City council meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Item 8C, DRB packets. I just wanted to throw this question out there. I know the packet for this meeting was extremely large. The question would be, does the DRB still want to have the hard copies? Or is the board okay with the just fully digital? So I know the city council is fully digital. So I just wanted to throw out there.
So personally for me, unfortunately, I have a small laptop. And I think the difference between what we're reviewing versus what council reviews is we're reading plans. Right. And I find that with plan details, it's very hard to read. You're constantly zooming in and out when you have a small screen.
Right.
So I prefer the paper. But I was very surprised that the material, the paper that you guys use is very thick.
I'll ask Shay about that because I think it has to do with, because it's color, printed in color, and maybe it's the color paper. But I can double check.
Yeah. And you know what? So just speaking from experience as someone who sat on your side before, when I worked for Redmond and for Issaquah, you know, we asked the developers to submit the drawings. We never printed them.
So they provided the packet?
Yeah.
And all the copies?
And all we had to do as staff is write the staff report.
Okay.
We used to do that. And then it was funny because now with our digital, with our online application system and that kind of thing, they just, they submit everything online and upload it to us. So it's kind of like, it's made that part easier, but then we have to print out the packet. So that's the other thing. And especially with us kind of all working remotely still, you know, it's kind of, there's some logistical issues there too, but that's something we could look into.
I would say I'm totally fine without the hard copy. I'm totally fine with the digital. If you can just make like some board members not having the hard copy. Otherwise, I have to take this out for recycling. Heavy.
I save all of them, King.
I don't have space to save this.
I know, yeah, it's terrible, but I'm one of those people who will go out there on site when the building is built, and I'm gonna compare what was approved by the DRB versus what they actually built. So I keep my plans.
I will send an email out later then, or tomorrow, just asking what the preference is for each member, and then maybe we'll just customize it for each member's desires.
And John, I'll be willing to pick it up from City Hall. It's, you know, I'm always down there anyway. If it's too much to, you know, because early I remember hearing the idea of printing them out and not folding them. So it would just be a 11 by 17 format. Yeah, so it's obviously bulkier. Yeah, that's still doable. I mean, I can just pick it up from City Hall.
Okay. And then lastly, next meeting. So we will do the call arounds as usual, the meeting, the Monday prior. I'm looking at the calendar and let's see. Yeah, the next meeting will be, well, February 21st would be our typical meeting, but it's a holiday, President's Day. So that means we got March 7th is probably our next meeting date. And I think we'll have at that agenda, there's a mixed use project just north of Village at Totem Lake. Just directly, so north of Village at Totem Lake and directly west of Evergreen Hospital. So it's that last corner, northeast corner. Is it
that
corner.
Last property?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's the applicant's Main Street properties and they've combined, there's actually two parcels there. So they're looking at redeveloping that, both parcels. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be in for their conceptual conference on the 7th, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. Main Street did one of the other parcels on that block too, right? They did another one somewhere in that area.
Not immediately next door. Yeah, but maybe in the area.
Yeah.
You might be right, Brad. Yeah. Okay, that's it for me.
Thank you.
Adam, you get to close it out.
We need a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion, we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
You can say it, Adam.
Good night.
We're done. We're adjourned. Yeah.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.